This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Welcome to the People Speak radio show. I'm Allison Weir, your host today. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m., 9 to 10, that's Pacific time, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests. The phone number is 888-429-5471. This is a particularly special show tonight, and quite a timely one. 49 years ago tomorrow, Israeli forces tried to sink a U.S. Navy ship with all men aboard. That was Israeli forces. They attacked the largely defenseless electronic ship for somewhere between an hour and a half to 2 hours, strafing, shelling, napalming, and torpedoing the ship, machine gunning life rafts and stretcher bearers. Thanks to an exemplary and exceedingly well-trained crew, a skilled and courageous skipper who received the Congressional Medal of Honor for his actions, and what some believe was either divine intervention or luck, the ship stayed afloat, and most of its crew members lived to tell the story, as the saying goes. But they didn't really get to tell the story. Israel, the U.S. government, the American media, and even now, American Legion Hunter have done all they could to prevent these men from telling that story. There was a quick inquiry that lasted only 1 week, a preordained conclusion that the attack was a, quote, mistake, and the sailors were told never to talk about what had happened to them to anyone, not to their wives, parents, friends, or even to one another, and certainly not to the public. But tonight we have with us one of those crew members, Joe Metters from Corpus Christi, Texas. Joe was a signalman on the bridge throughout the attack. He is a past president of the USS Liberty Veterans Association and its current director of operations. For decades now, Joe and his shipmates have been trying to overcome perhaps the most significant cover-up in U.S. military history, about an alleged ally who killed American sailors with impunity, an American president who recalled rescue flights and allowed servicemen to die rather than, quote, embarrass an ally, and about media and others who have participated in and enabled that massive cover. Joe, thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you and to have the chance to speak to you and to allow you to tell the public many things about that attack. I'd like to especially start with what you yourself experienced that day, starting from the beginning, where you were and what you saw, if you could tell us about that now.
Oh, immediately before the attack, we had just secured from general quarters, and as a signalman, my workstation and my general quarter stations was the signal bridge, which is the highest deck on the ship. We'd secured from general quarters and had gone down to the bridge level, the pilot house, in preparation of getting back to the normal routine of the ship, when one of the officers noticed on the radar screen some very high moving contacts at very low level coming up on our starboard side. We had been reconnoitered about a dozen times that morning by Israeli aircraft. One of them flew so low that we could see the markings on his wings, and it rattled the deck plating on the ship. And we could also hear them radio back to their headquarters that we were an American ship. Well, so with that in mind, a bunch of us ran up to the 04 level, the signal bridge, to watch what we thought would be another circling of our ship. But the aircraft got up on our starboard side, our right side, turned left to commence what we thought would be another circling of the ship, but they got almost immediately in front of us and turned immediately left and started strafing us. And there's no sight more terrifying than watching a plane come directly at you with its nose all lit up with machine gun fire. After that, I ran down to the pilot house and basically hunkered down, waiting for hopefully some rescue aircraft to come and help us out. That air attack lasted about 30 minutes or so, and when in the lull between the aircraft attack and the torpedo boat attack, I went out to the port wing of the bridge and noticed that our flag wasn't flying. It had been shot down. So Frank Brown, one of the quartermasters, and I grabbed the first flag we could find, which was the Holiday Colors, our largest flag, and hauled it up on the halyard. And Frank was unfortunately killed during the attack. But that flag was flying throughout the torpedo boat attack.
This is really, of course, very significant, because Israel, ever since, has claimed it was just a mistake. And they have said, I believe, that they've claimed at one point, I think they said there was no American flag and they didn't see it. And yet here you're describing that it was, of course, flying an American flag. And then you even hoisted a larger, I guess a pretty huge American flag. Is that correct?
That is correct. And also, just recently, within the past 6 months or so, in an article in, I think it was the Jerusalem Post, that they released a transcript or an audio recording of the pilots talking to their headquarters immediately before the attack. And they clearly identified the ship as American, and they were told to attack anyway. So it's not just our story. It's they're starting to release some information, unfortunately, and not enough.
Now, getting back to your own experience, I cannot imagine how terrifying that would have been. And I'm amazed to think that you and your shipmate went out and hoisted a flag. Did you have to work up the courage to do that, or did you just sort of automatically do it, or what was in your mind when you went out?
Well, if I had taken a minute to think about it, I probably wouldn't have done it. We just looked at each other and went out and did it without even thinking.
Wow. And you're saying that he unfortunately died later on in the attack? Was it?
I didn't see him, but I understand he was at the helm when a bullet hit him in the chest and killed him instantly.
So that strafing. How many times did these flight of Israeli aircraft come over and strafe and shell the ship?
We don't know exactly, but they started out with high-speed Mirage aircraft that took out our antennas and our gun tubs. They put at least one rocket inside each gun tub and each antenna mount, so we were basically blind and we couldn't get any messages out. Then they sent in, after that, some lower-speed Mystere aircraft, and they fired cannons and rockets and napalm at us. The napalm, of course, was to trap us all down below so the torpedo boats can come in and torpedo us and sink the ship and kill all the survivors.
So that there was half an hour worth of, at least, of all of that. And then And then torpedo boats came and circled the ship, as I recall, and launched, I believe, 3 torpedoes. Can you tell about that? And did you see it or sort of learn about this afterwards?
Well, I felt it when it hit, of course. They fired 5 torpedoes at us, and one of them hit on our starboard side where our research spaces were. And they claim that their reason for firing upon us was that one of our gun mounts had opened fire, and that removed all doubt in their mind that we were in an enemy ship. Well, in fact, that was Dale Larkin who fired that round, and he fired a single bullet before his gun jammed, and he didn't fire anything else subsequent to that. After the torpedo struck our ship, the torpedo boats slowly circled our ship, firing at close range at USS Liberty crewmen who had either trapped topside or who had ventured topside to help our wounded shipmates. And I saw one of those torpedo boats myself when I went out on the port wing of the bridge, and I saw them look up at the bridge area and look at the flag and all that stuff, and they just pulled back and continued the attack. And after the torpedo attack, they brought in assault troops in helicopters. And again, I saw those from my position on the port wing of the bridge, because they were hovered right close to us, and I could see very clearly in the open door in the helicopter that they were assault troops with automatic weapons.
But fortunately,
they didn't find a place to land, or we wouldn't be here talking today.
Yeah, so they attacked you by air, then by sea with the torpedoes ripping, I believe. What was it, a 40-foot hole in the
hole? Yeah, it was something like that.
And then when it still didn't go down, they had, I guess, commandos that were on these helicopters.
Excuse me?
Then I guess at that point, they sent aircraft helicopters with armed commandos that were going to expect board the ship and try to scuttle it that way. That's remarkable.
And that's our theory of the attack.
Yeah. What's interesting is of course everybody is, you know, clearly from what you've seen, what you saw, what I've talked to other people, what, you know, there's a great deal of evidence that you and the other survivors have put together. There's no doubt it was an intentional attack, and they knew it was an American ship. What's interesting is to figure out, they, as you just described, they disabled the antennas fairly early on, not soon enough to prevent, you know, one.
I'm
breaking up.
Yeah, you're breaking up.
Okay, I'll try again. They, as I recall, the early flights took out the antennas right away, but missed one because it was not transmitting, because it was broken. And so then Terry Habaldier, who was also from Texas, and another man saw what was wrong. Terry went out on the ship and took a wire and repaired the antenna. So the Liberty was able to get out an SOS, a Mayday, to tell what was being done to it. But after that, then they took out all of the antennas. So, you know, if it was only to prevent the Liberty from broadcasting what was going on and collecting the transmissions of the Six-Day War, that was accomplished at that point. And yet they continued clearly trying to sink the ship, and it appears, kill every man on board the ship. Do you think that's what they were trying to do? And if so, what do you think was the motivation of the Israeli government?
Well, nobody knows what the actual motivation was. And if they only wanted to take us out as a possible listening post reporting back to the U.S., all they had to do is send a torpedo boat out and tell us to move. The theory that has been bandied about most is that the Israelis wanted to invade the Golan Heights. But since we were close enough, and their troops were mostly in the Sinai Peninsula area, and in order to move them from the Sinai Peninsula to the Golan, they would have to have a considerable amount of radio traffic. Now, we weren't in a position to actually detect what that traffic was, but we could detect an increase in traffic, and they wanted to ensure that they were successful in invading the Golan Heights and in acquiring the Golan Heights before the White House found out about it. Now, whether that theory holds up after a U.S. government investigation of the attack is anybody's guess. But since the U.S. government has never conducted an investigation of the attack, we're still waiting to find out what the actual reason for the attack was.
I should now interject for anybody that's just come in to listen to the show now. This is the People Speak Radio, and I'm Allison Weir. My guest tonight is Joe Metters, who was a crewman on board the USS Liberty, an American electronic ship that was attacked very ruthlessly by Israeli forces in 1967, on, I believe it was the third day of the Six-Day War. Joe was just describing being on board that ship.
Fourth day.
Oh, the fourth day. Now, again, Israel and its partisans and other people who seem to be connected to Israel all claim that this was just a mistake. They also claim that supposedly, I think they say there were 10 or 11 American investigations into the attack. Can you tell us, is that true? How many investigations were there into the attack?
There were none. The myth of the 13 or so investigations by the U.S. government was first promulgated, as far as I know, by Jay Kristol when he wrote his book. In fact, the reports that he insists are investigations of the attack on the USS Liberty aren't. The one that comes closest is the U.S. Navy Court of Inquiry, which granted it was ordered to investigate all aspects of the attack. The convening authority recognized that the court didn't, in fact, do that, so he only gave it a conditional endorsement in writing. And my thinking is that he was hoping that the investigation would either be continued at a later time or there would be subsequent inquiries and investigations of the attack that went more thoroughly into what happened.
Just to clarify, who is the he that you're talking about?
Who is the what?
You're saying he expected to do something. Who is the he?
The he is John McCain, Admiral John McCain.
I see.
He's he's the senator's father.
That's right. He was the one place who sort of was in charge of that one-week inquiry.
Yeah, he was called the convening authority. He issued the order to conduct the investigation, and he ultimately signed off on it, but he only gave it a conditional endorsement. It's not complete.
Yes, that's interesting. So from his point of view, maybe it's not as bad as it had looked, but he actually thought at some point there'd be more of an investigation, but of course that never happened.
No, plus, they'd have to investigate a lot of things, like why did they take testimony about witnessing the machine gunning of our life rafts out of the report. Lloyd Painter testified that he witnessed the torpedo boats machine gunning serviceable life rafts we had dropped over the side, and his testimony doesn't appear in the record. And also Glenn Oliphant has told us that he witnessed it too, and he wasn't asked to testify.
So in just to sort of clarify it for listeners who may not know about this attack very much, what happened after the attack was that Admiral McCain, who was in charge of the whole, he was in Europe and he was in charge of the whole, that section of the U.S. Navy, ordered this one-week inquiry to gather evidence about the attack. And then that was considered the, an inquiry into the attack. They took evidence only, I believe, from a small number of the crew members, certainly not all of the crew members. Were you allowed to testify during that inquiry?
No, and according to others on the ship, there were, at the court's request, some 65 Liberty crewmen submitted written statements to the court, and those statements have mysteriously disappeared from the record.
And then even the ones who testified directly, such as you're saying Lloyd Painter, for example, and Glenn Oliphant.
No, Glenn didn't testify.
Okay, but Lloyd Painter did testify, and yet his testimony is not in that very lengthy report.
His testimony about his witnessing the machine gunning of the life rafts doesn't appear. He testified on other subjects, but that part of his testimony has been removed from the record.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't learn about it until about 10 or 15 years later when they released the report.
Now, I know that after, this extremely violent and traumatic event in which there were just body parts all over the ship and bodies, 34 men had been killed. I believe that we know it was at least 174 were injured, some of them extremely badly injuries. So in the midst, after the attack and when finally you got help, even though rescue flights had been recalled, finally aircraft carriers came nearby and people came on board the ship. So then this convening authority sent Admiral Isaac Kidd and his assistant, I guess, who was the chief prosecuting attorney for the inquiry, Ward Boston, who ended up being a naval captain, at that time he was a lower rank, went on board the ship and talked to the individual crew members and asked them what had happened to them. Isaac Kidd, an admiral, was, from what people told me, was fairly sort of fatherly to these young sailors and said, "Son, tell me everything that happened." The sailors would then tell him everything. He even would, I think, at times took off his stars and said, "Just tell me, what happened." Then he would put the stars back on and said, "Now don't ever tell anybody anything. Don't talk to anybody about what you experienced. Don't talk to your family. Don't talk to other crew members." Did that happen to you? Were you one of the people that you talked with? Or?
That didn't happen to me, but it did happen. I was taken the next day, on the morning of the 9th, when we rendezvoused 16 hours after the attack. I was taken by motor whaleboat to the USS Little Rock for some wounds I received. And so I wasn't on board when they took those statements.
I remember I spoke with Ward Boston, Captain Boston, several years ago. He was, as I said, he was one of the ones, he had gone with Admiral Kidd and on board the ship, saw the really horrific conditions, was part of this one-week inquiry. And then several years ago, I guess it was in about 2003, I believe, Ward Boston came forward and publicly stated that they had been ordered to cover up what they had actually found and seen, that they had been ordered to find that the Israeli attack was just, quote, an accident, and that all the evidence showed it was not an accident. And according to Captain Fox, they were ordered to do that by the White House, by Lyndon Baines Johnson.
That is correct. And in fact, the very first finding of fact in the Court of Inquiry report states that there is no evidence to indicate that the attack was deliberate. Now, bear in mind, according to the rules that govern courts of inquiry, finding the fact must be supported by evidence and testimony in the record. There is no evidence or testimony in the record on the subject of the intent of the attackers. So that may be one of the things that Admiral Staring, who was McCain's legal advisor, had noted during his brief review of the report.
I agree. That's very interesting. Maybe you could tell listeners how, you know, again, there is this 1 week, very quick investigation. Normally, this would be a 6 month process. So in 1 week, they gathered up, you know, whatever they could gather in 1 week, wrote this report, I think it's 80 or 90 pages. Captain Ward Boston then took that to London to Admiral McCain. Under McCain was an attorney, at that time a young attorney, named Merlin Starn, who later rose to become a rear admiral and in charge of the whole legal department. So we're talking about a very capable, extremely brilliant man, Merlin Starn, who was given this 80 or 90 page document to examine. And Joe, can you tell people about his comments about it and what happened when he did that?
Oh, sure. Merlin was given the responsibility of reviewing the Court of Inquiry report with an eye toward advising McCain on signing the endorsement. But he only had it for just a very brief time because he found a whole myriad of mistakes and errors in the report that he didn't think that, or he thought that if McCain signed it, it would be a black mark on his record, and because it was so deficient in so many different ways. And so evidently McCain found out about that, so he took the report from Starring's responsibility after just a very, very short period, gave it to somebody else, and he submitted it for an endorsement, albeit a conditional endorsement.
That's, again, you know, there are all these odd circumstances with this. I talked to Admiral Starring several years ago, and that's what he described to me also. He said that as he was going through it, one of the problems he had was that it had come to the conclusion that this was the attack was, quote, mistaken identity, that Israel, it claimed, you know, had mistaken the ship for a much smaller Egyptian transport that was half the length of the Liberty and I believe only about a quarter of the mass, that had Arabic letters on it, not American letters, not, you know, English letters on it. And that supposedly this was a case of mistaken identity. But in this long document, Starring said to me that he couldn't find any evidence, that there was a conclusion there without any evidence in the document itself, and that was one of its flaws. And, you know, apparently that was one of the reasons that he was, you know, had noticed that disparity, and then it was taken away from him for review. And he said in his whole career in the U.S. Navy, that was the only time that something he had been given to review was ever taken away from him. Well, we're now, I think, at the bottom of the hour, and we'll need to have a little bit of a break. We'll come back soon. This is Allison Weir. I'm with the People Speak Radio on the BBS network. We'll be coming soon back with Joe Meadows.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
You're listening to The People Speak. I'm your host tonight, Allison Weir, and we're back with our guest, Joe Metters, a man who was on board the USS Liberty, an Navy electronic ship that was attacked by Israeli forces in 1967, an attack that killed 34 Americans, injured over 175, and that has been swept under the rug ever since that time. Joe has been describing what it was like on board the ship and the cover-up that seemed to begin really almost immediately. Now, Joe, I know we have a caller, so I guess we'll quickly get to that caller, and then I have a few more questions I want to ask you, too. But we have
Mike on line one.
So, Mike, we'd be glad to take your call.
This is Mike in California. Hello, Allison. Hello, Joe. Joe, 49 years tomorrow. That is
Hello, Mike.
Almost a half a century. And I'm wondering, my question to you is, over in about a half a century, is the Joe Metters of that time, 49 years ago, do you think he is the Joe Metters of today for better or worse because of what happened? I noticed that you were also involved in the Gaza flotilla. I mean, has it become more than just a fight for justice for the USS Liberty survivors, but a fight for human rights?
I think so. I'm different, obviously, and better educated. My flotilla experience was not an outshoot of the attack on the Liberty, but I grew up in Saudi Arabia. And I got to know many of the Palestinians that had been displaced during the Nakba. So I've known about it since I was a child, and that was the reason I got involved with the flotilla.
Thank you.
That reminds me that on the ship beforehand, I remember reading in Jim Ennis's excellent book, Assault on the Liberty. I really encourage people to get that book. That in there he describes how the sailors were sort of following the war just out of curiosity, and some were on the side of Israel, some were on the side of the Palestinians. You know, do you remember, were you part of some of the people that followed that war, or do you remember anything about that?
Well, the only way we could follow it was some people had radios that could pick up some radio stations that were in the area. Of course, it had to be something like Voice of America for us to understand it. But actually, I wasn't involved in the politics of the time at all myself. And to be honest with you, when we first were attacked, I thought it was the Egyptians who had attacked us, not the Israelis, because we didn't know what the status of the various forces were, because we just out of contact with the world, basically.
Yeah, so at first, I think that a number of people have pointed that out, that I've been told that it appears that the Israeli aircraft had covered up the Israeli insignia so people could not tell what country was attacking them. Was that your own?
That is correct. We were attacked by unmarked aircraft, and they jammed our radios on the U.S. Navy tactical and international maritime distress frequencies. So they knew what our frequencies were, and they knew how to jam our radios. The question being, how did they know what our frequencies were?
Yeah, what's your answer to how they would have known your frequencies?
Espionage, of course. They have spies everywhere. And of course, all countries spy on others, so that's not a criticism of them. Just a statement of fact.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, Israel spies on us. I believe the General Accounting Office said more than any of our other countries that are supposedly allies, but Israel does it far more than anyone else. So I think you're right. That's probably a pretty safe assumption that that's how they got that. So if they, as you say, even your assumption on board the ship, and certainly the Americans, the way that war was being portrayed, Israel was supposedly our ally and our good friend. So everyone would have, if this ship had gone down, which Israel clearly tried to do, they didn't just disable the antennas, they then continued the attack long after that. So if the ship had sunk, if the life rafts, which you described being shot up, so if nobody had survived, then, of course, the American public would have thought that the attack was by Egypt. And quite likely, then the U.S. forces would have joined the war and would have attacked Egypt. Has that occurred to you, and do you think that might have given information?
Absolutely. The tactics they used by jamming our radios, machine gunning, and rocketing inside every gun tub and antenna mount, torpedoing us, destroying life rafts in the water, having the torpedo boats leave the scene immediately after they finished their attack, and returning half an hour later, quite surprised to find a ship still afloat, and sending out helo-borne assault troops. It must have been quite a surprise that we were still afloat, and it was obvious on analysis that those tactics could very likely result in the ship being sunk and all survivors being killed.
Yeah, and then bringing the U.S. into a war that we had, we were not intending to be part of. And luckily, because the ship did not sink, that didn't happen. If it had, some people really see this as potentially a false flag kind of attack to bring the U.S. into a military intervention.
Some have expressed that opinion.
And again, that's the reason, some people say, well, who cares anymore? This was 49 years ago. That's a long time ago. Why does everybody keep... Why do some of you and some of us keep trying to get the public to learn about it, to do something about it, to have an investigation? Why? How do you answer that question? This happened such a long time ago, let's just forget about it.
Well, it didn't just happen just a long time ago for us. It happened, just yesterday, 49 years ago, or tomorrow, 49 years ago. So it's happening to us constantly. The reason we ought to want to have it investigated now is for historical accuracy, plus the fact that we feel strongly that the Israelis and the Americans committed war crimes during the attack. The Israelis, when they machine gunned our life rafts and jammed our radios and used unmarked aircraft, and the Americans, when they recalled two flights of rescue aircraft while we were still under attack and calling for help. So just for historical accuracy, so we can walk down the street with our heads high, knowing that we were patriotic Americans serving our country and volunteering to lay down our lives if the occasion arose. But
that's right. And yet instead of that, you've all been sort of, pushed aside, ignored. When you've tried to speak out about it, often called names. I think, you know, aren't Liberty veterans called anti-Semitic when they try to just talk about what happened to them?
Oh, absolutely. And when you write to a member of Congress asking for them to tell you something about the USS Liberty, the boilerplate response you get is words that are submitted to them by the Israelis or their supporters in the States. They won't use anything that we, who are there, supplied to them. We can tell them that all the things that I've described previously, and they just won't include it. They say that it's been investigated and they have no intention of reinvestigating it. Well, those aren't our words. Those are the Israeli words. Now, why would a U.S. member of Congress use words supplied by the attacking forces? Why don't they use ours?
That's the question, I think, that needs to be asked. You know, here we have American servicemen, you know, serving their country, attacked very ruthlessly by a foreign country, and we have governmental representatives, congressmen, civilians, all taking the word of the attacker and the side of the attacker, the foreign country that attacked Americans, rather than the side and the evidence supplied by the American servicemen. You know, to many people,
Not only taking the word of the attacker, but taking the word of the attacker without question and criticizing anybody that does question him.
That's right, and trying
and totally ignoring us.
That's right, and again, to remind to any listeners that have just come in to listen to this, this is The People Speak. I'm Allison Weir. I'm speaking with Joe Metters, who was a sailor on board the USS Liberty that was attacked by Israel in 1967, in which Israeli forces killed 34 Americans, injured at least 174, and tried to sink the ship. And then ever afterwards, we've had a cover-up by the media, by the government, certainly by Israel, by the American Legion, that now, maybe Joe, you could describe how the American Legion now won't even let the Veterans Association have a booth at the National Convention of the American Legion. And let me just quickly point out, the Liberty crew is the most, I believe, the most decorated crew since World War II. This is a highly decorated crew, and yet the American Legion, whose mission...
For a single action.
Here we have the American Legion, supposedly to support American veterans, not even allowing this crew to have a booth at their national convention. Can you tell a little bit about
that? Yeah, and if you go to their webpage... Sure. If you go to the American Legion's website, which is legion.org, and just search for USS Liberty, you'll find it'll direct you to a page of frequently asked questions. And in that is one about the USS Liberty. And they just claim in that statement that it's been thoroughly investigated, and there's no intention of investigating it further because they've had some 10 investigations. Well, when we told them that that's factually incorrect, they just totally ignore us. And there's almost every year somebody in the American Legion submits a resolution calling for an investigation of the attack, and that gets approved, you know, from the local level, the state level, to district level. I don't know all the levels it has to go to, but it gets approved all the way up to the national headquarters, and there it just disappears. And then when anybody asks about it, they say, well, anybody can submit a resolution, but people have, and they just disappear.
That's right. I actually ended up writing a very long article about the American Legion. I was so shocked at what was going on. People can go to the website honorlibertyvets.org. That's honorlibertyvets.org. And on there is a lot of information about the Liberty, photographs of the 34 young men who were killed, a number of articles, and also my article about the American Legion, where the American Legion members, I discovered as I researched it, through the years, it appears to me, have consistently supported their fellow veterans and tried to pass resolutions in support of the Liberty veterans. And time after time, these resolutions get quashed, they get thrown out, they don't get go forward, because at the top, something happens to them time after time.
And you can compare that to the response that we received from the Veterans of Foreign Wars. They currently have, I think it's about a half dozen active USS Liberty resolutions that they have to that guide their programs. It's not a question of when somebody submits a resolution to the VFW and they already have a previous resolution in effect that covers the same thing. They say, well, we don't need it, so we'll just cancel it. No, they approve that one, and they approve the next one. They approve the next one, and they approve the next one. Now, that's an organization you can get behind. But once you get up to the national headquarters of the American Legion, and I always refer to the American Legion, American in quotes, because I don't think that the national organization is anything near what the membership thinks they are.
Well, certainly in this case, they're not representing American veterans. They're representing Israel in this particular incident. It seems clear to me.
That's exactly right.
I think anybody who is a member of the American Legion or has an American Legion post nearby, if anybody's listening to this radio interview, I hope you will go to the local American Legion post and tell people what's going on. The Liberty survivors served their country. The government sent them, placed them in harm's way, and now does not stand by them. And now the Veterans Association, the American Legion also, has abandoned this. I've talked to the wives and the sisters of some of the men that were killed. They are treated with disdain, without the respect that they deserve. This needs to change. You know, this was a deep injustice and wrong. There needs to be an investigation. What went on? Why were the rescue flights recalled? Why did the President of the United States order this to be covered up? Why has the media gone along with that year after year, repeating misinformation, saying that this has already been investigated 11 or 13 times, when that is completely without foundation? You know, there needs to be an investigation. Certainly what the Israeli government learned from this incident, this attack, was that they could try to sink a U.S. Navy ship, they could kill American servicemen with impunity, and the amount of money to Israel would just go up and up and up, so that today we give them over $10 million per day. This is an extremely historic and significant event, and these men are still around. They still have their stories to tell, their firsthand eyewitness accounts, and this should be done on Capitol Hill. So anybody that's hearing this, I hope you'll help these men and the families of the men who did not survive get the justice that they should have gotten long before now. It's not too late, and it's time to do that. One of the things that some people have been trying is putting up billboards around the country telling about this attack. And what we find is that Israel partisans in various places, for example, in New Haven, Connecticut, bring so much pressure against the billboard companies that just say, honor Liberty veterans attacked by Israel, honor, you know, help these veterans. They put so much pressure on billboard companies that the billboard companies take them down. They're, you know, it's astounding. It's an astounding situation. And there's a great effort to try to bring change by people like Joe Meadows. Joe, I know you've tried so many times with your local congressman. You know, can you tell us a little bit about, I guess we only have about, I think we have about 10 more minutes, so maybe you could tell about that a bit.
Oh, well, he's just a total work, you know. He's totally useless. I write him letters and he doesn't respond. I asked him, I don't know, a couple years ago, write a letter honoring Liberty veterans to be read during the memorial service, and I told him specifically about, you know, what I'd like to have him include, and he wouldn't include it. Nothing about the taking umbrage and expressing outrage about the machine gunning of life rafts, nothing like that. It was just a very bland, meaningless response. And his predecessor, who was there for some 30 years or so, was exactly the same way. You know, one's a Republican, one's a Democrat. It don't matter. They're all the same. You write your congressman, and they'll bring out their boilerplate that the Israelis or the Israeli supporters have supplied to them, and put that on a piece of paper and send it off to you. And when you point out that that's wrong, they'll just send the same thing right back to you. So writing to a congressman is a total waste of time, probably because he recognizes that if we ever do get a legitimate investigation of the attack, they're going to be the ones being investigated for allowing it to be covered up for so long. Arguably, they are accessories after the fact for war crimes, and that carries a hefty toll.
And this is, you know, more evidence. There's, again, the question of why do we support Israel? Why do we give it so much masses of money? Why do we cover up, you know, the media and the government minimizes these war crimes that are so often committed by the Israeli government and Israeli forces? And it seems very clear that it's because there's this very powerful special interest lobby on behalf of Israel that is embedded throughout the United States. And congressmen just don't want to go against it. They don't want to take it on. The American Legion seems to be dominated by it. Even the Veterans for Foreign Wars, VFW, which fortunately does pass those resolutions, does allow a booth there, but it doesn't. I don't see that really going out forcefully and publicly supporting these veterans the way that I think they would do in other cases.
But just to be clear, from our perspective, we don't care what effect this has on the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. We have just as much care about that relationship as the Israelis had when they actually attacked us. So we're just returning the favor. We just think that they ought to be held accountable for their actions.
We have about 3 minutes left, so people could still call if anybody wants to. The phone number is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. I believe on the BBS radio website there probably is a way to email questions. So there's a few minutes left here. Joe, as the caller brought up earlier, this must have clearly had a traumatic and devastating effect on the lives of many of the crew members. I think it still does on the lives of many of the crew members and probably on you. Can you sort of describe what that's been like for people and for the families that have experienced this?
Well, for me, it took me 30 years before I went to the VA. I figured they're part of the government, so I don't trust them. And then I went to them, and they diagnosed me with PTSD and gave me all the drugs that that I need to handle it. There's some survivors who have had operation after operation after operation for the past 50 years trying to get some of the metal that's in them out. And I don't think there's any of us that aren't affected by this, especially at this time of the year when you get all these people saying, hey, it's been 50 years, why investigate it now? And my response to that is what Congress tells you is we've refused to investigate it for 50 years, so we can't investigate it now. So they're trying to make their own excuse for not investigating it. But yes, it affects me on a daily basis.
And, you know, affects all of these other people, the families, the other veterans, the people that see what's gone on all of these years. We now recognize the importance of closure for people. And there's no closure until there is a final investigation and acknowledgement about what was done to the USS Liberty, to the families and the veterans. Our time now is at an end. Thanks so much, Joe, for appearing on this program. Thank you to the listeners. Thank you to PBS Radio. The show will be back again next week, 2 p.m., 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern. We hope you'll tune in again. I hope people will tell people, others about the USS Liberty, about these veterans, and about their right to closure and to an investigation and acknowledgement. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being with us, Joe.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.